Game on 2FM.
With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein, your way.
A big thank you to the fantastic Jenny Green. It's Tuesday the 27th of April and this is Game On.
Coming up today, Mark Langdon talks Champions League as Thomas Tuchel takes Chelsea to Madrid for tonight's semi-final first leg.
When I started in academy football, every day was a gift and every day I enjoyed every day with my under 14 in Stuttgart. And later it was an under 15 and then it became an under 19 and then was the step to only be coach of an under 19, full in charge and don't need to work in any other job. This was already a big gift and I could never imagine to arrive in semi-final of Champions League.
We've live racing from the Punchestown Festival with the Champions Novice Chase coming up very shortly. Plus, we've Barry Geraghty on the rest of today's action.
As they make their way on now towards the final fence in the William Hill Champion Chase, and it is Jacques and Pourceau who's opened up a clear lead to the last. Jacques and Pourceau over the last and a long way clear from Alaho in second. It's Paul Townend ahead of Rachel Blackmore as they go up towards the line. He was a monster performance here as a novice, and Jacques and Pourceau is going to win the William Hill Champion Chase in good style for Willie Mullins.
And we chat to Waterford's Maura Shannon about darkness into light. Plus we hear from Katie Taylor as she prepares to renew an Olympic rivalry this weekend.
But I do just remember the atmosphere from that fight, and the Irish fans can proudly say that they broke the decibel levels in the arena that day. It was just a fantastic week for me personally, of the achieving a childhood dream. I would have had no idea that 9 years later we will be facing each other again in the pro ring. So it's very, very exciting.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. We would love to hear from you. Marie, it's a big day around the Crow House.
Huge day. It's a 9-year-old's birthday. Hey. Timmy turned 9 today and he's absolutely buzzing. He's so excited. He got a Germany kit for the Euros coming up. He's heading off training tonight with his new football boots on. It's great, actually, I have to say. I just remember him saying, I remember last night he said to me, oh, this is my last night as an 8-year-old. And I remember that excitement and the innocence and everything, so it's great, and he's buzzing at home.
I love that he's gone off training for the evening, though. You know what I mean? And you'd normally think they'd be sitting around, he's out and about, he's far too busy. Straight on with the new boots, the new jersey, get him out in the green.
Yeah, between the three of them, they have 6 training sessions this evening. So his dad, Billy, is going to be so busy driving around, dropping him here, there, and everywhere. It's a manic day. It's actually a great day to be in work, I have to say.
There's a lot of people at it, I'd say. There's a lot of people in the cars now. A bit like that organising, we're back to athletics tonight, so there's excitement around our house and there's people just getting back to it, Marie, isn't it? It's great.
It really is. So to celebrate them, we're going to have pizza at 8:30. Ooh. And watch the Champions League match between Real Madrid and Chelsea and have the cake.
Best 9-year-old birthday of all time.
Big time. There was some news today, Donegal, not good news, unfortunately. Leinster are going to be without their skipper Jonathan Sexton for this weekend's Champion Cup semi-final against La Rochelle. Big blow for him, I think, as much for the province.
Yeah, I think we spoke about this. I think, without being disrespectful, but Leinster is a bit of a machine at the moment, and you know whoever will step up there will do a really good job. But Johnny, I think, is world class, and just for him to be out, Marie, this is a big week where only 4 teams go out into action, and you just know Lions coaches will be watching certain performances, and for me, he's nailed on as a Lions tourist this year, but I don't think that's the case when you listen to other media. And I know there's big pushes around Scottish players and English players, but they question Johnny's ability to be on the pitch an awful lot. But that's because of our welfare policies in Ireland. Johnny's really well looked after, and you know every time he steps on the pitch, he's 100%. But the disappointing thing is he just seems to be picking up a bit of unfortunate knocks at disappointing times, and that can lead to, you know, people questioning and stuff. But it is disappointing, because when you come to the bigger games, Marie, the air gets a bit thinner and you do need your marquee players. So La Rochelle this weekend, he would have been a brilliant fill attack have on, and you know he would have bossed it.
I would have loved to have seen as well how Ronan O'Gara set up to play against him.
Yeah, well, they'd know each other really well. I don't think Raj, he can make, he's so ruthless, he can actually make that emotional detachment. You know what I mean? He won't go after areas that he knows he's not going to get gains. And that's interesting for me anyway. And sometimes it's something you do. I remember Eddie O'Sullivan used to do it an awful lot. He would speak to opposition coaches and get them to review some of our games to ask them for our faults. Could you spot our weaknesses? And that's what always happens after games. You realise, oh, they thought we were short on the blind side, so they kept attacking it. That's an area we have to fix. So I think Leinster will probably be too strong this weekend for La Rochelle, but they'll certainly, you know, come away from it having learnt. And I think Rog will question them in certain positions. But Johnny is a loss. And it's more so personally, I think, I'd hate anyone to kind of question his ability to make a Lions tour. I actually think with that coaching ticket as well, you need someone like him. You need a confrontational person that will actually put it up to coaches to look for higher standards and to push the attack.
Well, it is on next weekend, and we'll be previewing it on Thursday evening in the company of Stephen Ferris and Fergus McFadden. So a mouth-watering weekend of rugby to come. Now, you mentioned coaching there, and Rory Best is officially dipping his foot into the world of coaching. So he's linking up with the Seattle Seawolves in America's Major League Rugby. And I have to say, Donica, it is not a league I know a huge amount about.
And not a lot of people do. And to be honest, it's been a bit of a shambles for the last 2 years. It fell down in the middle of it. They're a bit like the Super League. They're trying to go down a franchise model and it wasn't really working and there was different owners. But hopefully it's getting to a point where they can get support from the unions and that they can drive it there. Look, rugby in America is a sleeping giant, Marie. If you just look at the talent pool they have of athletes, if you just look at track or field or basketball or American football, if they could put some of those athletes out on the pitch. And I think...
Sure, Donica, the sheer numbers alone that play school and college football and then don't make it to the NFL, like those, that's an untapped resource of athletes that would be perfect to go and transfer their skills to rugby.
And they love it, Marie. I just didn't know from, you know, my brother-in-law is American, and anytime he watches, when Aaron watches rugby, he's there, this thing is crazy, no pads. And he's just going on something, oh, my accent's brutal there. But
so Donica, are the Seattle Seawolves our team now?
Yeah, I don't know if we go that far, but do you know what? Rory's a good person to have there. He would be brilliant with on-pitch stuff, but he's also good for setting up procedures. And like we used to slag him that he's a bit of a CEO in boots. You know what I mean? That he questions authority and he you know, he looks for things for the betterment of the squad. So he'll certainly be someone that can go in there and, you know, have an effect on the whole club. You really would love this to go well. I know Gary Gold was my coach in Worcester. He's now in charge of the US the main team there. And he was there. He's there. The talent is there. It's just trying to put it all together. And if they can get a league and, you know, get good players within it and get good pass players like Rory to actually, you know, set it up right and put in good structures, I think it would be good for rugby because we need to grow the game.
Yeah, and there'll be plenty of people who would watch it as well. My brother has texted in and wondering if he can come for pizza tonight. Yes, you can, Timmy. 8:30, the Real Madrid-Chelsea match will be underway, but we will be dishing out the pizza. Now, I'm delighted to say that Mark Langdon joins us on the line to look ahead to that game. But Mark, before we get to that, there was a little bit of manager merry-go-round going on, and Bayern Munich have got their man in Julian Nagelsmann, so he is going to leave RB Leipzig, and he's only 33. These young managers, they're just, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, he's a veteran now. He's been around for, I think he was 28 when he started out at Hoffenheim and saved them from relegation. He then took them into the Champions League. He then took Leipzig to the Champions League semi-finals. Everybody in Germany is excited by his potential and, you know, believe he is the next best thing. I would say that managing Bayern Munich is completely different to managing the two teams that he's coached previously. The expectation, the you know, the pressure from supporters, the pressure from the Bayern hierarchy is not for everybody. He looks like he's cut out for it, but I suppose you never know until he walks into the job. But he's a very confident guy. I think you've got to be when you start coaching in your 20s and to manage senior professionals like he did. I think the first sign of weakness there, you know, that the players would have found that out, and he's not had sort of anything like that. No comeback from the players. He's training sessions are said to be meticulously well planned. I think the Bayern players will enjoy that. He was spoken about as being a mini Mourinho when he first came onto the scene. I think that doesn't do sort of that does a disservice to the kind of coach that he is. He's somebody that would look up to, say, a Pep Guardiola more than he would a Jose Mourinho. So I think it's a very exciting appointment. Maybe not for Spurs fans who've been hoping that they could tempt him to North London. He was and is a Tottenham supporter. Tottenham are his English team, but Bayern Munich are his German team, and I don't think anybody was pulling him away from Bavaria.
So with things not going well now for Mourinho, and plenty of coaches have been called mini Mourinhos over the years, so who are they going to be now? Mini Peps, is it?
Yeah, I suppose they are. It doesn't quite work, does it? It's more difficult, I think, to come up with a catchy nickname for the new Pep. But I think that Guardiola is sort of changing the way a lot of coaches look at football. He's not on his own. There's a number of sort of possession-based coaches out there, but because he's the sort of highest profile, because of what he did at Barcelona and Bayern Munich and now at Manchester City, he's the one that a lot of young coaches are looking up to. And so I think it's just a natural progression that when somebody's as successful as what he was and still is, that people try to copy him. And despite he didn't win the Champions League with Bayern Munich, he left a major impression on everybody at the club. They were so pleased that they had an identity and a style of play, and I think that's what they'll be looking for from Nagelsmann. It won't just be about winning, it'll be about that sort of process and becoming a name in their own right, in terms of, right, we know what Nagelsmann stands for, like you know that what Pep Guardiola stands for. That's what they're looking for from their coach. They don't just want to win, has to be with a certain style.
You mentioned that style, Mark. And will he have to change there? Will he have to change a format, a way that he plays, a coaching style to bed in with what they're used to? Or is he coming in and be given an open landscape to put his print or stamp on it?
I think he'll be given the opportunity to put his stamp on the team. It's changing quite a bit in the summer anyway. David Alaba, one of the stars of last season when they won the Champions League, he's already moving on, so that they know they've got to find a replacement for him. But Upamecano, the centre-back who's from Leipzig and who knows Nagelsmann well, he's already signed for Bayern for next season. I don't think it needs a lot of fixing. I know that there was this big drama about the fact that they went out of the Champions League quarter-final stage, and it was seen as a bit of a disaster that the Bayern Munich didn't get past Paris Saint-Germain. But I don't think there's that much wrong with Bayern Munich, and I don't expect him to put like a sledgehammer to this team. I think it will be quite minor tinkerings, and particularly at Leipzig, he was used to other people buying the players and him then working a system that fitted into those players. So it won't sort of be alien to him, the fact that Salihamidzic, the sporting director, will have a say in what type of player Bayern sign in the summer, and I'm pretty sure he'll be delighted to work with the quality that they've got. But you might just see a slight change of style, I suppose, and become even more possession based than what they already are.
So Mark, the first Champions League semi-final is on tonight at 8 o'clock, Real Madrid and Chelsea, and then tomorrow is PSG and Man City. So when you look at Real Madrid and Chelsea, and just, I suppose, how defensively they've been playing, especially in the last few weeks, do you think it's going to be a cagey affair tonight?
I do, yeah. I don't want to spoil your pizza party by suggesting it will be a complete bore draw, but I mean, it has got the makings of those Liverpool versus Chelsea Champions League semi-finals that people watch, but they maybe weren't entertained by. Real Madrid have had 3-0 draws in their last 4 matches. They're struggling to score goals, and Zinedine Zidane, a player that sort of graced the world stage and was such a beautiful technically gifted footballer, he's built like a really robotic Real Madrid team where he sort of favours pragmatism over expressive football. He would say that he hasn't quite got the tools anymore to be able to deliver that kind of Real Madrid style that I think most people have come to expect in the Champions League, and it's that pragmatism that's got them to the semi-finals, particularly the way they played in the second leg at Anfield, just shut the game down, particularly in that second half. A really experienced midfield, Casemiro, Kroos and Modric feel like they've been there sort of for sort of 15 years. I don't think it's quite that long, but you know, real mainstays of the team. Ramos is out, but I think Militao has come in and done a really good job, actually, in Ramos' absence. You've got Varane back as well. A question mark over the left back. Mendy is out. Whether they go really defensive and play Nacho as the left back, or whether they're more adventurous with Marcelo. But I would have thought that Real Madrid's first sort of instinct here was to try to keep a clean sheet. And in Courtois, they've got a goalkeeper who's been in fantastic form. And of course, going up against his former club.
Mark, just given the nature of transfers amongst the big super clubs, if you look at Casemiro, Cruz and Modric, 279 appearances for Casemiro, Cruz 317 and Modric 385. So that's almost 1,000 appearances. How have they survived together for so long?
Yeah, I think it's the manager in Zinedine Zidane that actually, one of his faults, and this is, you know, hard to question somebody that's won 3 Champions League titles, but one of his faults is that he's not overly trusting of young players, and he hasn't got much patience for them, which is why you've seen somebody like Odegaard, who, you know, he came back to Real Madrid from his loan spells, was expecting game time, and he wasn't delivering the same kind of performances that Zidane knew he could get from Modric. And of course, I think most coaches would understand that that's the way with younger players, and that you will have your ups and downs, but eventually, you know, it outweighs it to, you know, to stick by these younger players. Somebody like Valverde, who played right back at Anfield, is another one that maybe hasn't quite trained on like people were expecting him to. But I think that is a fault of Zidane, and he is only looking at the now. He's not, and probably you could understand it, Real Madrid coaches, if you don't win, you get the sack. So, you know, looking too far ahead is maybe a mistake. But I think other managers would have looked to have moved at least one of those midfielders on by now. But Zidane, he trusts the older players. He plays in a style that doesn't ask them to do stuff that they can't do. So they're not going to go charging around the pitch trying to win the ball back high. You know, he saves their energy, and then just expects them to deliver that quality on the pitch. And it's not a coaching style I love, and I think that there are more expressive teams left in the competition, but it has got Real Madrid to the semi-final, and it has won them Champions Leagues in the past.
Mark, on that, if Thomas Tuchel knows that, isn't it up to him and Chelsea to go on the front foot tonight and attack and look to get a goal?
Yeah, only we haven't really seen that from Chelsea. They've been very patient under Thomas Tuchel so far. Even on Saturday against West Ham, they never went chasing the game. They were happy at 0-0, and they were just waiting for their one opportunity. It came, they scored, they won the game 1-0. That's what they did against Atletico Madrid. Even when it's not working, like against Brighton this time last week, they drew the game 0-0. At no stage did they go sort of, you know, for leather and try to leave themselves exposed defensively. It was always those 3 centre backs absolutely remain in place. At least one of the wing backs will stay back. The 2 midfielders, Kante and Jorginho, stay in front of that back 3. So they've always got at least 5 players, and usually 6 players, sort of on the defensive side of the ball. And it's not something I expected necessarily from Thomas Tuchel. I think that he is somebody that in time will develop a more progressive style of play at Chelsea, but I think he's found a system that's working for him at the moment, and he'd be loath to change that in a Champions League semi-final. The one thing he's got to guard against, and Liverpool I think failed in this respect, is the matches being played at Real Madrid's training complex, and switching the players on that this is a Champions League semi-final and it means absolutely everything. I think that's easily done at the Bernabeu when there's 90,000 fans there. You know, you feel that sense of occasion in front of an empty training complex. It's really different, and I think that's where Tuchel will have to work his magic, because the Real Madrid players have been playing like this for over a year now. They know it inside out. It's a sort of alien concept, I think, for a lot of visiting teams.
Dylan McClure has tweeted in and said he hopes that Chelsea beat Real Madrid tonight, and he says that Real Madrid are not in good form in La Liga. It's Barcelona's to lose in the title race to Spain. That might be accurate, but they are playing a little bit better in the Champions League. And Phil in Cove says, Peps could be a good name for them.
he's
giving us that one for free. So PSG and Man City. So we're talking about managers here, and Pochettino coming up against Pep. Do you think Pochettino has what it takes as a manager and the team that he has to derail Man City?
Yeah, I do. I mean, he's done it with inferior players when, with Tottenham, they knocked Man City out of the Champions League at the quarterfinal stage, and then beat Ajax in the semi-finals and obviously lost to Liverpool in the final. So, I mean, he's taken a team that probably on paper didn't deserve to be there, you know, as far as they could go. If he gets the same kind of buy-in from the Paris players, the results could be spectacular, because Mbappe is in fantastic form at the moment, playing as the central striker. When Pochettino first came in, he was playing Mbappe out on the wing. He's moved him central. He's scoring goals. I thought Neymar was brilliant in the second leg against Bayern Munich. He missed a couple of chances, but his overall play was fantastic. So it looks like he's got the two most important players sort of on side, and that's always the most difficult thing, I think, for a new coach. If you get the best two players buy in, then the rest will follow. And I think that their results are improving, and that sort of victory over Bayern Munich in terms of, you know, progressing on the tie. I know they lost at home, but that victory I think changed everything for them, because had they gone out, I think questions would have been asked of Pochettino, because the Champions League is where he will be judged. And if you knock out the holders in Bayern Munich, the world champions, then you're clearly doing something right, and that they'll take great belief from that. I still think that Man City are the best team in Europe and the best team in the world, so it's going to be a very, very close game. But I, if PSG go out, I don't think it'll be because of Pochettino.
Okay, Mark, thanks so much.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now it is time to turn our attention to horse racing. It is day one at Punchestown, and to assess the action so far, Barry Geraghty is with us. Barry, we've been building up to this Shaq and Persuas performance, and we finally got it.
Yeah, he was brilliant. It was a brilliant race. Himself and Alaho really went at it, but and more, the English challenger as well, First Flow, they had a real fast pace from early, and there was swapping position, Alaho and Shaq and Persuas at the front. But Shaq and Persuas always looked to be the horse who was travelling most comfortable. He looked the natural 2 miler amongst them. And, you know, that cruising speed, being able to travel, Paul Townend said afterwards, it was his jumping that won it. He was just able to jump at that speed so well. It was a real classy performance.
So that was in the William Hill Champion Chase. That was on at 5:25. And tactically as well, Barry, he seemed to make the right decisions. Rachel was asking a few questions of him throughout the race, but it just worked out well for him.
It did, but he was always in this comfort zone where I don't think Alaho was. And Shaq and Persuas, for me, he got beaten in Cheltenham, but he never looked to be travelling with the same ease. For whatever reason, I just don't think he brought his A-game to Cheltenham, but he brought his A-game to Punchestown today.
He really did. And he was using his riding out boots, which I was not familiar with at all, Barry. But how much of a benefit was that for him, just given the injury that he's had in the run up to this?
Well, I'd imagine for two reasons. One, for the support, because it's a heavier boot. It's a thicker leather. It's got a more of a solid sole. But also, he's got a good bit of swelling in his foot as well. So I'd say it was easier to get into the riding out boot, which would be a little bit more roomy than, you could say, the racing boot, which is tight and really... Yeah, really fitted. So a little bit more room and a bit more support. But he showed no ill effects, Paul, in his riding on anything today. So it was also another winner for him. So he's gone 5 ahead of Rachel. So he's making it harder for Rachel in the Jockeys Championship.
Barry, just on that, for Paul there to back Shaq and Persuas after you mentioned Cheltenham not going as well, you know, it was a leap of faith by him as well. He knew what he had, though, didn't he?
He did, but he probably had a good indication at home from the horse's well-being and his work. But through the race, never at any stage during the race would Paul have felt anything but like the winner. He travelled easy, he jumped easy. He knew Alaho was working hard, and albeit Alaho finished well in second, he was never travelling as easily or as comfortably, and Paul was really dominating the race.
It was good to see him back to winning ways, I think, especially after watching the Ecom Merchant Solutions Champion Novice Hurdle a little bit earlier, which saw echoes of rain with Patrick Mullins win.
Yeah, it was a good performance, and that puts Patrick one ahead of Jamie Codd in the amateurs title. So there's lots of titles up for grabs this week, but it was a good performance. Colonel Mustard ran well in second. He finished well, and Blue Lord was probably a little bit disappointing in third, but he's had a busy season, and for me, I think he's better off over 2.5 maybe, but you'll see him over a fence next season. But Echoes and Rain was a good performance.
We're going to be going very shortly to the Champion Novice Chase, the meeting of Monkfish and Envoy Allen. Just call it for us before we go to Barry.
Oh, these are probably the two best novices we've seen in the country in years. Envoy Allen has done absolutely nothing wrong until he fell in Cheltenham last time, but he was a little bit keen on that occasion, which I think is going to work against him today over this longer trip. He'll need to relax. Monkfish, on the other hand, he was workmanlike in winning at Cheltenham after being very impressive before that. I don't think he brought his A game to Cheltenham, so I'd be hoping for a Shaq on Pursuire, kind of Lazarus from him. And I think over this distance, I think it's better suited for him. I think Envoy Allen's style of racing that he showed in Cheltenham, I don't think it's going to lend itself as well to the 3 mile.
Willie was interviewed a little bit earlier as well, and he said that the ground should probably suit both of them.
Yeah, the ground, they've done a brilliant job watering, and it's on the slow, so they go. There's lots of juice in it, so it's very safe, and it's very comfortable for horses, so it should be perfect for everyone. But yeah, it's going to be a massive clash.
Well, we're going to find out very, very shortly who's going to win, because it is time now to join our commentator, Richard Pugh.
Number two, and it's Col Reavy who leads now by about a length to Monkfish in second. Envoy Lynn is a further length back in third as they take the first of the ditches. He came up very early there, Envoy Lynn. Maybe that'll teach him, maybe that'll give him a fright, we'll see. Franco Deport is back in third, but the stage is set now. Col Reavy has decided to go on. In second spot is Monkfish. Racing in third now is Envoy Lynn, and just in behind them in fourth is Franco Deport. They're going to turn now to race down along the side of the track, and Col Reavy, the mare, leads the four runners. Just slotting in behind now is Monkfish, and in behind him again is Envoy Allen. Franco Deport is last of the quartet. So they come to race on now towards the first of the two fences before they turn into the straight first time, and it's Col Reavy who leads Monkfish. Back in third is Envoy Allen. Franco Deport four as they rise to the first of these two. Safe jump there by Envoy Allen. Spent a little time in the air, but making the way now towards fence number four. Col Reavy, Monkfish second, back in third is Envoy Allen, and just in behind them is Franco Deport as they take the fence now before they turn into the straight. And Col Reavy leads over Monkfish, Envoy Allen, again a little careful, Franco Deport third, fourth. We might just take early views as the way this race might pan out. Col Reavy has gone on, a little bit of an awkward jump by Envoy Allen. Anything to be concerned about early?
I'd be very happy with Monkfish. I think he's in a better rhythm than he was at Cheltenham. Davey, Envoy?
Yeah, Envoy, he seems to have left some bit of an effect on the fall. He's up in the air a little bit and not maybe as fluent as he has been in the past at his jumping.
Well, plenty of opportunities to put that right. It's Col Reavy who gets very low over that one, and Envoy Lynn did the same. They're both very novice-y there, and as Davey said, not the fluency we would have seen in the Drinmore before Christmas. He's going to have to sharpen up because Monkfish is doing it all fluently at the moment. Plenty to go. This will be the last next time, and it's Col Reavy now who's going to lead over. Ears pricked from Monkfish, who jumped it well in second. Envoy Lynn did the same in third, and they're being followed by Franco Deport. So now they've got to race up to pass the very sadly empty grandstand. It is Col Reavy by a length and a half to two from Monkfish, racing in second. Envoy Lynn is third, and they're being chased back and forth by Franco Deport as they begin now to rise, making their way on up towards fence number seven before they face away from the stands. And it's Col Reavy, the mare, who leads the mount of Danny Mullins, who won this race back in 2013 on Mount Ben Bulbin, being followed in second spot by Monkfish and Paul Townend, who now enjoys a 5-length lead at the top of the riders' title from Rachel Backmore. She sits third on the inside on Envoy Lynn, and last of all is Franco Deport, the mount of Brian Cooper. He won this race on Disco for Noel Mead back in 2017. Now they turn to make their way towards the fence at the highest point of the track. This is fence number 8, Col Reavy by about 3 lengths or so to Monkfish in second. Envoy Lynn is third as they clear that one. Franco Deport was awkward there, landed a little awkwardly, and is just 3 lengths further detached. Now they race down the hill, making their way down towards the two fences at the bottom of the track, a ditch and a plain one, and leading them down is Col Reavy in the colours of owner breeder Niall Flynn. In second spot is Monkfish, back in third is Envoy Lynn. Franco Deport four as they make their way on now towards these two fences before they turn into the back straight. Col Reavy, winner at the Cheltenham Festival last time, she's on a run of success, she's won her last four. Monkfish going to jump at second. He, a 3-time Grade 1 winner over fences. He's danced every dance. Envoy Lynn, a is towards the inside now in third, and Franco Deport is last to the quartet. This is the final fence before the turn into the back straight, and Nwalin seems to have got into a smoother rhythm and is jumping now and has come through on the inside to share the second third with Monkfish as they chase Colreevy, and Franco Deport is tucked in behind them. They turn into the back straight now, line of three fences ahead of them. Seven fences and all to be jumped. Colreevy leads Monkfish. Nwalin, just a slightly slack rein for Rachel Blackmore back in third spot, and Franco Deport last of the four. As they go now to the fences right across from the stands, and it's Colreevy over from Monkfish. Nwalin is third, and they're being followed in fourth spot by Franco Deport. Now they go towards the middle one along the back straight. Colreevy, by about four lengths, is just beginning to extend on now as they go towards this one. Lands in front of Monkfish in second. Nwalin is third, and Franco Deport just in behind them. They now go towards the final fence. Along the back straight is the final ditch, and Colreevy has led them thus far. Monkfish never too far away. Nwalin towards the inside as again the mare gets deep to that one. And now they've got a race on towards the bend out of the back straight. They have four fences left to go. It is teed up perfectly. Final opinions, please.
And Colreevy is still going along nicely in front. Paul's a length in front of Rachel. I think he's going to want to get up on top of Danny shortly and start stretching Nwalin's stamina for my money.
Yeah, I'd agree with Ruby. The only one thing I'd say about Nwalin, he's leaned out to his outside. Rachel's hitting him a slap down the shoulder. That's not the Nwalin that we have seen in the past.
Looks a bit lifeless at this point in time, you'd have to say, but Colreevy looks quite the opposite. She's really enjoying things in front as they come towards this one. Colreevy over from Monkfish. Nwalin putting out distress signals now, a long way from home. It's not stamina, it's a different problem, and Franco Deport is last of all. They make their way towards the turn in with three to jump. Colreevy, Monkfish, Nwalin and Franco Deport as they come now towards the fence before the turn in, and over in front it's Colreevy. Monkfish hit it hard, Franco Deport is gone, and now the mare has them on the stretch as they begin to turn towards home. It is Colreevy who's going to lead them in from Monkfish in second, Nwalin is third, and out in front it is Danny Mullins who's got them on the stretch as they turn towards the final fence. Monkfish the one that's going to try and get back on terms. Nwalin is not going to get to them now. Head towards the second last, and it's Colreevy comes to it. There's just two left racing. It's a different match now. It's the mare on the far side. It's Monkfish the near as they make their way towards the final fence. Colreevy, her final ever outing. Monkfish will have another day, but coming towards the final fence, it's Colreevy who stuck it to them from flagfall, comes to the last over in front. She's awkward, but she'll never jump another because Colreevy is going to go out on winning terms. One of the finest matches we've ever seen, and the mare, we understated her, but she's won it today. Colreevy, farewell. She's won it in style. Monkfish is second, just the two to finish. Well, what a result. What a result for the owner breeder. What a result for the underdog. The ratings said she was at the top of the pile. Well, you know something, the ratings don't lie. They've got this one just right. Nwalin wasn't right. Monkfish, to be fair, he's danced every dance, and as Ruby said earlier, he'll quite likely be back again. But Colreevy, we won't see her again. What a way for a mare to go out. She's won her last five. The daughter of Flemingsfirth, as we said beforehand, covered by Walk in the Park oh so recently. Danny Mullins won the race a number of years ago back on Mount Belbulben, but you can see what that means for him. That grade one success on Colreevy, it's her ninth success from 15 runs. She's won close to 300,000 in prize money. She's a half sister to five winners.
Barry, what a performance there from Colreevy. We weren't even including Colreevy in the conversation before the race.
No, we weren't, and she was a winner at Cheltenham. She won the Mare's Chase at Cheltenham, but a brilliant performance today, and she's in foal. She's now retired after that, so the Flynn family, who are big owner breeders down in Dungarvan, have this mare now home, safe and sound, and she's another grade one under her belt. It was a brilliant performance. Nwalin, there was distress signals from early. He didn't jump with the same fluency. I suppose he remembered that fall that he had at Cheltenham. He never looked as happy in Rachel's hands. And Monkfish, he travelled well through the race, but you could see in maybe the last mile that Colreevy was just beginning to stretch them.
Colreevy, just watching it, did actually race like it was going to be the last race that he was ever going to be in.
No, she was brave, and she's a big, strong mare, and she put it to them. And there was no doubt the best horse on the day came out on top, and it was a brilliant performance and a great win for Danny Mullins as well, who's had a brilliant season too.
So just on Nwalin there, you said that the fluency wasn't there and that possibly that fall was still in Nwalin's mind.
Yeah, so he had a fall at Cheltenham, and I'd say he was caught by surprise by that. And You know, you need race practice, you need practice and at home even. But schooling on grass wouldn't be so easy with the ground as hard as it is. So, but even to get that race condition, where you have that whole atmosphere and jump, it's a whole mindset. So he got a big fright in Cheltenham, obviously, with that fall. And he remembered it. He didn't jump as cleanly. And when you're traveling at that stronger pace, and you're not jumping as fluently, you're losing a bit of ground, you're automatically on the back foot. And although he did jump better through the middle part of the race, he wasn't travelling with the ease that he normally would. So it was a big disappointment. It was good to see Rachel pull him up, and he seemed okay being pulled up. But it was a disappointment for the race. But what a result for Coolreevy. Take nothing away from her, because she beat Monkfish, who was the likely, who was favourite.
Go on,
just before I mentioned that Willie had said that the ground suited both Envoy Allen and Monkfish, and said that the ground didn't suit Coolreevy.
Yeah, I'd say he was worried it wasn't soft enough for her, but they've done a brilliant job watering Punchestown, so they would have made the ground slower than anything anywhere else in the country, because it's been so dry, and it actually was raining during the race, which would even help. So the more moisture there was in the ground, the better for her. But it was probably a better performance than she put up at Cheltenham. It was her best performance of her career to beat those two horses and to do it in the style she did.
Yeah, you wouldn't play poker with Willie Mullins for sure. But just on Coolreevy there, you know, 5 wins in a row, we should really have been talking a little bit more about her.
Yeah, definitely. But she got overlooked in the hype of the clash between the other two big horses. But she's had a brilliant season. But I'd suppose most of her form, her best form, is on heavy ground. And then that the mare's chase at the festival, which you always think those mare's races just aren't as competitive as when you're taking on the geldings as well. So everyone, the bookmakers, the punters, everyone was overlooking her. So we were all guilty of being sucked into the big match. But her form was in the book. She was rock solid, and she's just a real strong staying mare.
Yeah. Barry, what about Monkfish then? We spoke about Envoy Allen being nervous over the fall, and we heard Davy and Ruby saying that it looked awkward or very novice. What about Monkfish's performance?
He jumped well, but he was on the back foot in the last mile or close to it. So he had a tough race at Cheltenham, no more than the winner had a tough race in Cheltenham, but she seems to have come out of it better. As I said earlier, I don't think we saw the best of him at Cheltenham. And then you compound that with probably a hard enough race. I'm not sure if he'd fully recovered from it, because the performance he put in Leopardstown at the Dublin Racing Festival over 2.5 miles, that was devastating. And he just hasn't ran to that level today, I think. But you can't take anything away from the winner on the day. She was brilliant. She looked the picture. And the performance she put in was foot perfect.
It's nearly a cliche now at this stage of year into the pandemic. But imagine the crowds, Barry, if they had been there.
I know, brilliant. And brilliant results earlier on. Jodie Townend wrote a big winner. She's a lovely girl. Paddy O'Hanlon won the first for Philip Rothwell. There's been great results. The White Grass Syndicate won the third race. So there's been a brilliant spread of winners, albeit Willie's won most of them, but a great spread of jockeys and owners. So it's been a brilliant day, and yeah, it would have been a brilliant day to be there.
And lots more to come. So let's have a quick look at tomorrow before we let you go, Barry. The Punchestown Gold Cup chase, no Manila Indo, but there is a pretty stacked field. Album Photo, Kemboy, Clandazobu.
Yeah, it's still a quality race. It's a pity Manila Indo isn't there. But Album Photo, the winner of the previous two Gold Cups, for me, he is the one to beat. And a little bit like Chacun Poussoir and Monkfish, I wasn't fully convinced with him at the festival either. So I think he is better than that. Clandazobu, who won well at Aintree last time, he comes here after being supplemented Paul Nichols' horse. But Album Photo, he has the highest level of the form. Kemboy Ruby won this race two years ago, when he retired, and beat Album Photo. He's very good at the track, and he's been good at Leopards, and he's good at flat tracks. Facker de Riz, who won at Aintree as well, he's stepping up to 3 miles. So albeit Manila Indo isn't there, it's still a very competitive race, and it's going to take winning.
It really is. There are some very good races tomorrow. Also, the Irish Mare Novice Hurdle, Vanillier and Galloping Deschamps are two that people are keeping their eyes on.
Yeah, again, Cheltenham form. And Vanillier was really impressive in the Albert Bartlett over 3 miles. I think that was, you know, he's proven at the trip. He was really impressive. Galloping Deschamps is stepping up from Handicap Company, and he's stepping up in trip as well. He showed good pace in Cheltenham, but he's unproven at this trip. But Willie Mullins, again, he's had a big day today, and he could very easily have a big day again tomorrow.
We will be carrying live the Champion INH flat race at 6:30 tomorrow, and it is the meeting of Kil Crutt and Sir Gerhard.
Yeah, a big clash that everyone's waiting for. There was only a half a length between them at the festival when in the Champion Bumper when Sir Gerhard beat Kil Crutt, and a lot of people felt that the pace of the race would have played to Sir Gerhard's strength on the day, and Kil Crutt was maybe unlucky. And you would have expected Patrick Mullins to ride Kil Crutt for that reason, but he's gone with Sir Gerhard. Whether that's a reflection on Sir Gerhard's well-being or a negative reflection on Kil Crutt, I'm not sure, but it's a big step for Patrick to go with Sir Gerhard, having been such a big fan of Kil Crutt. And as I say, the weight of opinion was generally that Kil Crutt was a little bit unlucky at the festival. So I think it's a big sign that Patrick has gone with Sir Gerhard.
Yeah, it could be very telling indeed. Barry Geraghty, thanks so much for joining us. We will be back with our racing coverage again tomorrow. Davy Russell joins us. We're going to take a very quick ad break. Then we're going to hear from Katie Taylor, and we'll also be speaking to Mara Shannon.
Game on 2FM.
Now, there is a huge weekend of sport awaiting, and Katie Taylor will take centre stage. She's back in action. She takes on her old amateur foe, Natasha Jonas, and she's defending her unified lightweight crown against Jonas. So let's hear from her. She's talking about how both fighters have changed.
Yeah, I think we're both very, very different fighters now than we were back then, and that's why I can't really draw much from our last fight in the Olympics. We're both very, very different fighters now, and I say that we're both have transformed into good pro fighters, and professional boxing is obviously so much different than amateur boxing, and what works in the pro game isn't going to work in the amateur game, and vice versa. So we're both very, very different, and I'm looking forward to a great fight.
Obviously you had a couple of close fights against Pursuing. Are you feeling any pressure for a standout performance against Tasha?
No, I don't feel any pressure at all. I think I look at those performances as great victories, and obviously the first fight was a lot closer, but I think I showed in the first fight that I have a lot of heart and a lot of grit and determination, and I came out with a grueling win. The second fight was obviously a lot more clear cut. I felt really, really good after that fight, and I don't feel under pressure at all, really. I guess there's pressure going into every fight, because I know I'm aware that a lot of the times I am the favourite going into these fights, but that's a good thing as well. I think pressure is a privilege, and I feel privileged to be in the position where I am, winning fights, where my record as a fighter is a good one, and that's why there is pressure, because it's a testimony that you're actually doing well in the ring. So I see it more as a privilege rather than a pressure.
I spoke to Tasha a few weeks ago and asked her if she felt your fight should be the main event of the show. And she said any fight involving Katie Taylor, regardless of the opponent, should be the main event, given your undisputed status. I just wanted to get your view on it.
I'm always open to being the headline actor, I guess. But regardless of whether we're a headline or not, I think this fight could be the show stealer of the whole night. I think it has the potential to be that kind of a fight. I know when we fought twice as an amateur, they were both edge of the seat type of fights, and it could be the same on Saturday night as well, but I'm just glad to be involved in a big, big fight again, regardless of whether it's a headline act or not. I'm just happy to be involved in such a huge fight, and in a fight that people are really genuinely excited about, so it's a great position to be in.
That's Katie Taylor there speaking ahead of her fight against Natasha Jonas. And I have to say, I agree with Natasha Jonas. Any fight involving Katie Taylor should be a headline fight. And Katie there have been very generous in speaking about herself. Now, Donica, we're going to turn our attention to a very important cause, one that we here at 2FM have been getting behind in a big way. And it is One Sunrise Together for Darkness into Light on Saturday, May 8th. It is raising vital funds for Pieta's life-saving services. And you can sign up now at darknessintolight.ie. And I'm delighted to say that Waterford hurler Mara Shanahan joins us on the line to tell us about the importance of One Sunrise Together and the Darkness into Light movement, which I think it is at this stage. Morris, how are you?
Not too bad, Marie. Not too bad knowing yourself.
Great. Now, I have to say, we were doing a bit of live sport there. It was absolutely brilliant to have it. It's my young lad's birthday, so we're going home for a pizza party. I have nothing to complain about. But look, it's great to talk to you, and it's great to be speaking about Darkness into Light, because I think that it is something that it has been really important to people over the last number of years, since it came into everybody's consciousness, really, as something that happens. Can you tell us a little bit about why you're involved in it?
Yeah, I suppose, look, I got a phone call there a few weeks ago just asking would I get involved with it this year, and it'd be something wicked close to my heart as well, because I suppose I suffered from depression back in 2014, and it took me a long time to kind of ask for the help, you know, because I wasn't kind of a person to open up to people or anything like that. And I suppose when I was playing in the county hurling as well, I suppose I didn't want to be kind of coming out as kind of maybe not ashamed, but maybe I didn't want to come out and kind of say that kind of stuff, because there wasn't too many GA players after coming out saying it, I suppose, or anything like that. But I suppose I bottled it all up for maybe 2 or 3 months inside me, and I got to my darkest place there in May 2014, and there's no way out for me. And I suppose only for being hospitalised and my family and friends that were there for me, I suppose I kind of had to open up to them. And the minute I opened up, it was a big relief for me, to be honest with you. I found a big relief because I talked to one or two people about it then, because I had no other choice. And the minute I talked, there was all this help out there, you know. And I suppose I got in contact with Pieta House and people that worked in Pieta House and them kind of places, and gee, the amount of work they'd done for me behind the scene was absolutely brilliant. And it's just now I want to get back a bit to it, because only for them I probably wouldn't be here today to tell the story, really.
We always speak about how important it is to go and talk to somebody, and hearing real life examples, Morris, like yours, like somebody who's able to come on here now and tell us, we're in 2021 now, so 7 years ago was your really tough time, your dark moments, but here you are now. Being able to encourage other people to do that, it must be a really great feeling to have come so far and to know that you're able to help other people now.
No, definitely, Marie, I suppose. I suppose when I needed the help, I could pick up the phone and ring people, and that's what some people do with me now. They might pick up the phone, and I might know them at all, to be honest with you. They get me number and they give me a quick ring, but like that, I'm not a counsellor or anything like that. But I just kind of tell them, if you're struggling in life, the only way you're going to get the help is to get in contact with kind of Pieta House or other foundations that will help you as well, or even counsellors. I still go to a counsellor if I need it myself, maybe once a month or something like that, and which is very good just to go and talk to them, you know, because even to this day, you do get bad days, and I still get bad days, especially with COVID and all that kind of stuff. People get more bad days than good, but the only thing I can say that helped me was talking. And anyone that's out there, young or old, just the one bit of advice I would say is ask for help. It might seem the hardest thing at the start, but when you look back, it's probably the easiest step you ever take, to be honest.
And Morris, even just by you speaking about it, you're normalising it, because when you think back to 2014 or the time around that, and I'd imagine it looked like, probably from the outside looking in, that everything was okay, because, you know, we think of sports people, as you said, and you don't ever really see that vulnerable side of them. You don't realise that they're just like me or you or everybody, and they all suffer as well. So to be able to see somebody like you who has gone out to Croke Park and played in front of thousands of people, to be able to stand up and admit that, and for people to see that as well, I'd imagine just really helps.
No, definitely. I think it helps a lot of people. When I came out and kind of said it was actually the night of the All-Stars that I got interviewed, and to be honest with you, I wasn't expecting it to take off the way it took off, to be honest. But the following morning, it was all over papers and that kind of stuff. But look, if I helped one person, and I'm sure I did at that time, and the feedback I got was that I did help a lot of people from it, you know, and that's why I'm kind of involved with Electra Ireland and Darkness Into Light this year is just if I can help any person, if it's young or old, boy or girl, I'd be after helping them in that way, if they can come out and talk to their parents or come out and talk to their friend. But like that, like sports people, I suppose in 14, I was kind of 3 or 4 years on the Waterford panel at the time, and I wasn't kind of breaking on the way I wanted to be breaking on, you know, and there's a lot of pressure in that, and it just kind of all got on top of me. But like that, when I did come out and talk, like, Derek McGrath was the Waterford senior hurling manager at the time, and he couldn't do enough for me, you know, and all the lads in the backroom team, all the players, like, there's no shame in coming out saying it, because, like I said, you're no different to anyone, because you suffer with a bit of depression.
Morris, that's so good to hear, because the mindset in a dressing room can so easily be to show no weakness. And there's probably people on their way of training now that felt like you did 7 years ago. And just for them to, like Marie said, to hear that, you know, chatting to someone even outside of Pieta House, but there's good people there that will help you and put you in the right direction.
No, definitely, Donegal. And I suppose I was kind of maybe afraid to even kind of say that at the time, maybe to my teammates like that, but even my club teammates, like you said, or GA teams or any kind of team you're playing on, you don't want to kind of show a weakness. But Jesus, I can 100% say there's no weakness in coming out saying it, and support I got from the Waterford lads, and especially my own club lads in Lismore, was absolutely 100% behind me. Like, they're up, there are lads calling my house nearly every night trying to get me out and that kind of stuff, and that's what I needed, like, and the one thing I will say, if you're a sports person or not a sports person, like, there's no shame in coming out saying you're just a bit depressed or suffering with depression now, because especially COVID, things are starting to open again, which is great, but we had a hard year and a half of it, and like I said, if you keep bottling it up inside you, something has to give. But if you come out and talk to someone, like I said, Pieta House are great to me, the GPA were absolutely outstanding to me and still are to this day, so I'm just grateful for all them people, to be honest.
And Morris, I'd imagine as well, like, the fact that the country is opening back up again and people are going to start seeing their friends again and be going back into teams as well, all that will help, because they'll be surrounded by people and in social situations, and they might find someone to open up to. So that's definitely a positive thing. And just for yourself, in terms of your hurling at the moment, Morris, I know that you weren't on the panel last year. I know you hope to get back on again. Is it still an open door for you?
Yeah, I suppose Liam Cahill came in there last year and he kind of went his separate ways with one or two lads. He dropped myself and Noel, and Tommy Ryan got dropped as well. But look, I suppose every manager has their own kind of game plan and their own players that they wanted, and I suppose we weren't part of his plans, and I don't think we will be now going forward. But like I said today when I was interviewed a few times, like I say, I didn't close the door, and if I can go back to my club and play well with my club, who knows, I'm not giving up on the dream to pull on a Waterford jersey again. But it probably won't happen, because I'm 31 and pushing on, so, but I won't stop dreaming of it anyway.
You're dead right, Morris. You know, Donegal played rugby too, is about 40.
Keep going, Morris.
Morris Shannon, thanks so much for joining us. Morris has teamed up with Electric Ireland, and he's inviting the public to join them for a very special One Sunrise Together for Darkness Into Light on Saturday, May the 8th, and that is to raise vital funds for Pieta's life-saving services. So sign up now at www.darknessintolight.ie.